This is Sun Sounds of Arizona, and my name is Robert. This is Arizona History. Today's Arizona History is the 1782 Apache Assault on San Agustin del Tucson by Mark Callis. Mr. Callis holds a master's degree in history from Harvard University. He has published on various topics in American history, taught community college, and worked at several history museums. In 2012, he delivered a lecture on Southwest history at the Florida Atlantic University. He is currently an independent historian residing here in Tucson, and his chapter is from spring of 2015. And here we start. On May 1st, 1782, an extraordinary yet little-noted event in the history of Arizona and the Apache peoples took place. On that day, a force of Apaches, estimated by the Spanish as 600 strong, descended on San Agustin del Tucson, a remote frontier town of less than 400 inhabitants. It was one of the largest attacks on a Spanish town in what is now the southwestern United States. Those on the scene described it as the largest attack they had ever heard of on a frontier outpost of the Spanish Empire. The forces of Apaches that launched the attack was notable not only for its large size, but for its purpose. For centuries, before and in the century following, Apaches supplemented their hunting and gathering existence by raiding the resources of more settled neighbors. Livestock raiding became their specialty. But by all accounts, the band that attacked Tucson left the domestic animals completely alone, focusing instead on the military and civilian inhabitants of the Spanish Presidio and the adjacent Pima Indian town. Their aim in what historian C.L. Sanchezson calls the crucial battle, which could have resulted in the destruction of Tucson, Fort, Mission, Pueblo, and all, was to wipe the Spaniards and their native allies entirely off the map and obliterate the Spanish military and civilian presence that threatened the Apache heartland. One would love to have documented expressing Apache motives and objectives. Unfortunately, such sources are lacking, and only the Spaniards speak to us directly across the chasm of time. But since there are always two sides to every story, we are bound by fairness and the rigors of scholarship to make the best attempt possible to reconstruct the motives of those who left no written records, but who played just as an important role as the Spanish settlers and soldiers and their Pima allies in this epic confrontation. To understand why the Apaches launched their assault, we must first examine what was happening in Tucson at that time. First of all, in 1782, the Spanish Presidio of Tucson was quite new, dating only to 1776, when the local garrison was moved north from Tubac. The Apaches may have been battling the Spaniards in the greater Southwest for centuries, but not in Tucson. In 1782, the Tucson Presidio was not the permanent feature of the built landscape it would be to later Apache groups. Rather, it was a brand new incursion on the edge of their homeland, a recent intrusion of Spanish civil and military authority closer to the core of the Apache heartland. When the Franciscan friar Juan Dominguez Arizavita would write in 1791, the Apaches have always sought to destroy the smaller rancheria at Tucson, it being the point of entry for their eruptions. Hugh O'Connor, the Irishman whom Viceroy Antonio Maria de Brucarelli had appointed inspector of presidios for Coahuila, Nueva Vizcaya, and Sonora in 1771, described the establishment of the Tucson Presidio as the perfect closing of the Apache frontier. Clearly, it was a key location from which the Apaches could either raid the farms and ranches across this part of northern New Spain or themselves be controlled by the Spanish military. Viewed in this light, the sudden Spanish presence on the Rio Santa Cruz must have caused special alarm to the Apaches, who had heretofore been accustomed to significant freedom of operation due to the absence of Spanish authority in the area. Moreover, The founding of the Tucson Presidio was part of a broader Spanish military strategy that, by 1782, had caused much pain to Apaches all over what is now the American Southwest. In September of 1775, Hugh O'Connor embarked on a massive 3-month campaign against the Apaches, comprised of 15 separate engagements, which resulted in 130 Apache warriors slain, 104 Apaches captured, and 2,000 horses and mules recovered. In addition to casualty and other losses suffered directly at the hands of the Spaniards, O'Connor's 1775 campaign forced 300 eastern Apache families to flee still further eastward into the land of their enemies, the Comanches, where they were slain on the banks of the Colorado River in Texas. According to historian Max L. Moorhead, by deploying the militia of Sonora in the mountains along the Gila River and the troops of New Mexico in the north, O'Connor hoped to crush the Apaches in a giant pincer movement. These movements against the Apaches were successful enough to earn O'Connor a promotion to the rank of Brigadier General in June of 1776. By 1779, the Spanish garrison in Tucson launched their own campaign against the Apaches in the Santa Catalina Mountains, just north of the Presidio, in which they attacked two rancherias, killing several of the inhabitants. The same document mentions a number of other campaigns launched in conjunction with Pimas, Papagos, and Gilenos that have always achieved victory against the Apaches. The Apaches undoubtedly understood that the new Presidio would make it easier for the Spaniards to repeat such episodes in the future, severely limiting their ability to raid Spanish and Pima settlements at will, and perhaps forcing them to relocate to distant, dangerous territories. In addition to the alarm caused by this new threat to their freedom, the physical condition of the Presidio in 1782 made it far more vulnerable to attack than it would be in later times. Whenever the phrase Tucson Presidio is uttered, the structure that typically comes to mind is the medieval-looking fortification with thick, high adobe walls, complete with firing platforms and gun ports, described by American travelers on their way to the California gold rush fields in 1850s, and recorded by American soldiers when they occupied Tucson later in the same decade. This structure did not exist in 1782. Its adobe walls were not begun until 1783, or early 1784, and the building was not complete until 1788. Don Pedro de Allende de Saavedra, who paid for the construction upon taking command of the post in 1777, described the Presidio as being without defensive walls, consisting instead of a stockade of crude masts with four bastions. Adjunct Inspector Don Roque de Medina left this description of what the fort looked like when he visited in May 3rd of 1779. The enclosure of the Presidio homes and structures is fortified with a wide ditch around and a stockade of posts that was ordered constructed by Captain Don Pedro de Allende, and two terraces where the cannons are located and soldiers outside of the stockade and under the defense of the artillery, and the short work raised to one side and more distant from the water than it could have been placed. At the time of the 1782 attack, the entryway to the Presidio was completely defenseless. In the words of Captain Allende, the entrance to the fortified area was without door or guardhouse. The Presidio's armament consisted of four bronze cannon, one of which would play a key role in the impending battle. Perhaps the Apaches correctly mused that, in time, a stronger fortification would be built and that they would be wise to strike right away before their best window of opportunity had passed. Whatever their thinking may have been, the Tucson Presidio was far more vulnerable to attack in 1782 than it would ever be again. It made sense to attack the outpost, though vulnerable, already loomed large enough to represent a tangible threat to the local Apache preferred way of life. It wouldn't be the first time Apache warriors had harassed the stockaded Presidio. In November 6, 1779, a large raiding party approached the palisade, but was chased away by a much smaller Spanish force. Pedro de Allende reported, "We went out after them with 15 men, the enemy being 350, and without calculation ran them over much of the land." After chasing the Apaches for an indeterminate amount of time, the two forces finally met in battle. The Spanish not only routed the much larger Apache force, but managed to slay a chieftain and his brother, Guichillo, the latter of whom they beheaded. In another incident, on June 26, 1780, Apaches kidnapped two girls from the vicinity of the stockade, but bid a hasty retreat under heavy gunfire, leaving their captives behind. Although both the attack and the attempted kidnapping resulted in disaster for the Apaches involved, two things are reasonably clear. First of all, these experiences undoubtedly drove home the reality of the threat the new Presidio posed to the Apaches, continued at freedom of action. And secondly, the Apaches now had actual battlefield experience with the newly relocated garrison, along with firsthand knowledge of the new Presidio's defenses and how they operated. They may have come away believing that they had a decent chance of making an all-out assault on the fort succeed. Another occurrence at about this time may have been bolstered the Apaches' confidence that they could oust the Spaniards from Tucson. Since the founding of the settlements in California in the 1770s, the Spanish had sought to link these settlements via a direct land route to Sonora. Indeed, securing a land route to California was one of the major reasons why the garrison was moved from Tubac and the Presidio established in Tucson in the first place. The establishment of permanent Spanish-controlled settlements at the Yuma Crossing on the Colorado River was key to this undertaking. According to Fray Francisco Garcias, unless Spain controlled the Yuma Crossing, it would not be easy to maintain the establishments to Monterey except at great expense to the Royal Treasury. On July 17, 1781, not even a year before the May Day assault on Tucson, these hopes were dashed when the Spanish settlement and mission at the Yuma Crossing of the Colorado River was completely overrun by a force of Cochin Indians who slaughtered 100 Spanish men, captured 74 women and children, and completely destroyed the settlement. The Cochin's thwarting of Spain's attempt to connect Sonora with California via an overland route was complete and lasting. Although three expeditions made the attempt, never again would Spain establish a settlement at the Yuma Crossing. History has not recorded exactly how the Apaches in the vicinity of Tucson reacted to what happened at the Yuma Crossing in 1781. However, there's little doubt they quickly caught wind of the successful revolt through the regional grapevine. For example, Alter Presidio commander, Captain Pedro Hueros, first learned of the Yuma disaster, not from the Spaniards, but from the Papagos who lived north of his post. News that expeditions of Pimas sent out by Hueros eventually confirmed. An event of this magnitude, the total destruction of a settlement that was immensely important to Spain's imperial ambitions on the northwestern frontier of New Spain, would have been hot news indeed for anyone living in the area at the time, regardless of language, group, nationality, or tribal affiliation. It may well be that the Apaches' attempt to overrun Tucson, occurring as it did less than a year after the Cochin's successful overturning of the Spanish settlement at the Colorado River crossing, was no coincidence. It is highly possible, even likely, that the Cochin's victory inspired the Apaches to attempt something similar at Tucson the following year. In addition to their recent battle experience with the Tucson garrison and its Presidio, the Apaches had numbers on their side. The entire population of Tucson in 1797, the closest year for which we have reliable numbers, consisted of only 395 individuals, and a report made just a few months after the battle listed the total complement of soldiers stationed at the Presidio At just 67, plus five additional men listed as officials or officers, Ignacio Felix Usagara reported that far fewer men than that were actually present on the day of the battle. The troop that was in the Presidio that day, including the captain, a cadet, and a sergeant who found himself sick, he wrote, was 18 men or soldiers and two resident civilians. These were tempting odds for an Apache force hundreds of warriors strong. As it happens, more than just logical conjecture supports the notion of a connection between the 1782 attack on Tucson and the devastation of the settlement at the Yuma Crossing the previous year. Father Gabriel Franco, a priest who witnessed the Tucson assault, reported that he had heard talk of Indians on the scene who seemed like those who had come from the Colorado, i.e. the Yuma Crossing, that presented themselves like the Indians that finished off that troop. In this way, those here had the faces erased of color like those there. In a similar vein, Ignacio Felix Usagara mentioned that women who had been resettled at Tucson from the overrun Spanish settlement at the Colorado Crossing reported something similar. Moreover, the Cuchins had a specific motive to attack the Tucson Presidio. In 1779, soldiers from Tucson had guarded the Yuma Mission while Spanish livestock was allowed to destroy Cuchin crops with impunity. Cuchin's request to the Spanish authority at Yuma and to Sergeant Jose Dario Arguello, commanding the Tucson force, that defending animals be fenced in were ignored. Destruction of the Tucson Presidio would not only make the Apaches more secure, but the Cuchins as well. And if the Cuchins could completely destroy a strategic Spanish settlement and successfully thwart subsequent attempts to subdue them, the Apaches surely had good reason to believe that, with the overwhelming numbers they were able to marshal, they could match the Cuchin success at Tucson, especially if, as some of the Spanish sites suspected, the Apaches were in fact supported by a number of Cuchin warriors. The attack finally came late in the morning of May 1, 1782. It had been a typical morning at the Presidio and in town, until the Apaches suddenly attacked, and by the hundreds, taking the Spaniards by complete surprise. The warriors appear to have divided into two groups. One group, consisting of men on horseback, held back from the actual fighting, apparently intending to surround the battlefield and prevent escape. The remaining Apaches advanced on foot to assault the Spanish Presidio and the Piman Pueblo next to the San Agustin del Tucson Mission on the opposite side of the Acequia. Father Franco, the priest from San Javier Mission, happened to be in Tucson that day, attending to his visita at the San Agustin Mission. His account sets the scene. Father Franco was prevented from seeing what the number of enemies that attacked this Presidio might have been, but despite the distance, he could hear the first shot, and climbing to the roof, immediately began to be informed of the Apaches who surrounded the Presidio in such numbers that they not only encircled the Presidio enclosure, but also at the same time stretched out into a wing that went straight for the sighted mission, for which reason it could not give aid. The Indian servant of Lieutenant Jose Maria Abate quickly discovered the attackers and immediately alerted Abate. Before the Apaches reached the entrance to the Presidio and could fully press the advantage of surprise, they found themselves taking fire from both Abate's musket and his servant's arrows, firing from positions the pair had taken on the roof of Abate's house. Abate describes the scene this way. The first day of May, about 10 a.m., the Apaches approached this Presidio. A servant of mine arrived telling me, "Here are the Apaches." I took my weapons and climbed to the roof of my house. I saw that the enemies had it surrounded, and as they did not expect harm from the roof, I was able, without being seen, to kill one with the first shot, and my servant with the arrows made one get knocked down. But when the Apaches saw that only two were firing at them, and those who had surrounded the house were about 115, more or less, they began to shoot at us, and returning their fire, I knocked down one. The wall on the roof resisted the arrows of the Apaches. And myself, firing at where they were, and my servant with his arrows, we wounded many, as every shot was unerring, and continuing to fire at them, I sufficed to fire 10 shots, and my musket blocked up. I ordered my servant to climb down and bring me another gun. He brought it to me, despite having been wounded in the middle of the engagement. And myself, returning fire, they started to flee. But observing that, I took advantage of this last shot, and although he, that is the target of the shot, fell, he was only wounded. I have never seen such a large number of enemies, and it appears to me that those who attacked were no less than 600. Despite the efforts of Abate and his servants, the Apaches pressed on towards the Presidio entrance, where they came up against none other than Captain Allende de Saavedra. Himself, Allende writes of the encounter, "The first day of May of 1782, he, that is Allende, defended the Presidio with some 20 men from 600 Apaches, who intended to finish off all of the inhabitants. The Apaches, making use of many houses for their offense and their defense, that served them at the same time as a hospital of blood in which to put the dead and wounded, and they even reached, in the first assault, the stockade that was without doors or a guardhouse. They wounded to death one soldier, already an invalid, and one neighbor, and to the defender, Allende, they shot him in the right leg. After the injury, Allende killed two of his own by his own hands." Here, Father Franco picked up the action, writing that, "I took into account with Father Valderian the multitude of enemies who were at the north of the Presidio, where they got the major force of fire, even though the Apaches having as many to the south and west, no heed was paid to them. Although they were all around the Presidio, scaling the walls did not seem part of the Apache plan, which focused instead on seizing the entrance and taking the fight inside the stockade. While one wing of the assault group was engaging the Presidio, the other wing, which stretched towards the mission, attempted to cross over the Santa Cruz River and enter the Pima village of Tucson, adjacent to the San Agustin mission, in the shadow of Sentinel Peak, today's A Mountain. At the time, the village stood on an island surrounded by the river and the settlement's major irrigation canal. Even during the spring dry season in 1782, the Pima village was accessible only by bridge. This may seem strange to people familiar with Tucson's contemporary hydrology, in which extensive groundwater pumping has eliminated surface water, except for floods, even during the summer monsoon season. But until the 20th century, the surface flow of the Santa Cruz at Tucson was year-round. In 1820, Father Juan Bano of Tucson informed the Bishop of Sonora that because much water flows, it was almost impossible to cross on foot the short distance between the Pueblo and the Presidio. As a result, the Apaches, rushing from the vicinity of the Presidio to attack the Pima village, were compelled first to cross a bridge over the flowing river. Recognizing the danger, two Spaniards and an unknown number of Pima Indians rushed to defend the bridge, thereby preventing the Apache assault from expanding beyond the Presidio. Ensign Ignacio Felix Usagara described the action. "The first day of the sighted present month, when the enemy fell upon this Presidio, I found myself in the Pueblo of Tucson on a matter of my commission, and with your permission in the company of the distinguished Juan Felipe Valderian, at which time, despite the distance to the shots and commotion, I hoped to get back to the Presidio, but I did not achieve it. On that subject, when I arrived at the bridge with the sighted distinguished one, the enemies were already taking over the site, and with sufficient force hoped to insert themselves through the island to the Pueblo. But seeing myself that there were many there, and moreover coming out happy, winning against them, it would be necessary for me to collide with another multitude who covered the pond and the Aquasia. I took it as good to maintain myself with the sighted distinguished person firing on said bridge, as much to impede their insertion into the island and Pueblo, as to aid some women and children who found themselves in the village. From there, the bridge, we saw the Presidio surrounded, And despite the fact that there were many Apaches everywhere, the major resistance from the Presidio was directed at the north of it. And that was what convinced me that there were, at the north end of the Presidio, was a major part of the enemy. And having taken from them the aim of entering the Pueblo, I returned to it and asked Father Friar Juan Batista Beldarian for some Indians, which he gave me immediately. I could, with them and the distinguished one, enter the Presidio after the end of the engagement, although all could see that the enemies had gathered not very distant. The enemy dead were the following, and I saw from the bridge one fall into a little pool, and who the Apaches picked up and carried, and another one, the distinguished one, and I firing upon them from the bridge, fell, and the Pimas continued shooting arrows at him and told us that they were going to get him, and for not wanting to leave the bridge, we left him. And I'm persuaded that this Apache is the one to whom the Pimas cut his head off, that your mercy has hung on the gate of the stockade, for his having a musket ball in the chest and two arrows in the side, according to those who went to see the body. The tracks that the Apaches left demonstrate that they had reached so far as 8 to 10 paces distant from the guard post, and that they had made much diligence to enter. In addition to the accounts of the soldiers, two priests, Father Franco de San Javier del Bac and Presidial Chaplain Father Juan Batista Beldarain, witnessed the battle and left written records that corroborate Yuscarra's description. And on that note, we will take a break of this part one, and we will continue on the next episode of Arizona History for part two. Thank you very much for listening. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona, and my name is Robert.